Claude, for quite some time you've been active in ACS affairs, all the way back to the 1930s in your participation in the Division of the History of Chemistry and Chemical Education. I guess I wanted to just ask you generally some of your own impressions about the ACS and what you did, and then specifically talk about work that you did in relating to the 1951 celebration and then the 1976 centennial celebration. So I guess just your general comments about your service to the ACS.
Well, I've been more than a 50-year member of ACS. So
now you've done quite a bit in the local section as well.
Yes, I was an officer all the way through the Philadelphia section. And then I helped on some of the committees, the national committees, when they were run by the sections. And then later on, the ACS ran them themselves. And I did some of that. Now, for ACS, I was officers, and I'm still an officer of the Chemical Educational Projects of the Philadelphia Section, which sponsors rewards and also subscribes some money for little projects.
Don't you also go around and talk about chemistry to high
school? Yes, and then I have been doing that for many years, and generally on the average of about 10 to 15 high schools a year.
And do you still do this?
Yes, and I have these slides, and it has to be, sometimes it has to be a brief presentation, because sometimes the high schools will not allocate enough time, so you have to go hop, skip, and jump to give them an idea of some history of science. Not just chemistry, but history of science as well. Well, I served the section for a long period of time, and I'm still serving it. Then I became involved in the National Sex Society, that I was supposed to solicit people who were in the Division of the History of Chemistry to what kind of designs and sponsors and projects they would like to show at the national meeting and be in the traveling display.
Now this is the 1976.
Yes.
Did you have anything to do with the 1951?
Yes.
That was the Diamond Jubilee of the American Chemical Society.
Yes. I wrote an article in that, on analytical chemistry.
Oh, very good.
And things of that sort. Well, so I solicited from these people what should be displayed in the history of science. And so we tried to get that together, Mr. Biggers.
Frank Biggers and yourself.
Yeah.
And you were then pretty much in charge of the planning of the exhibit that ended up being a traveling exhibit on display in New York.
Yes, and Biggers, Mr. Biggers, yes. And that then I had nothing to do once it left New York.
Well, what were some of the things on that exhibit? I never saw it. Do you remember any things that were on the exhibit?
I would have to get my files.
Okay, but at any rate, it was a traveling, a major exhibit.
And some of the things that were exhibited were not to be sent around, and others were. And so they had to design them and guard them, and everything else had to be done so that they'd go from one end of the country to the other. I forget how long a travel exhibit it was, but it lasted over a year.
Did you go down to Washington and help plan this as well?
Yes, yes. I went to Washington quite frequently. as we were planning these things, not just for the exhibit for New York, but for everything that had to do with the centennial, with the 1976.
Now, also involved in the centennial was your work involving the Franklin Mint.
Yes.
And I wish you could just tell us about that.
One day I got a telephone call from Mr. Stanerson and Jim Stack whether I would participate in designing a centennial medal. And I said, I'd help. I don't know who had done this before, but he said, we're not satisfied. Washington said that. So they said, made arrangements that I should go out to Franklin Mint and talk with a woman there. They were to plan it and then to mint it. And I should add whatever I wanted to and then discuss it with her. And then we would come to a conclusion and they would send it to Washington. And then Stenerson would approve it or disapprove it and then they'd mint the medal. So it was back and forth for quite a time. Then they finally minted it, and that was the medal that was accepted. So I think there's one here, and if not, I have one at home, too. I have an extra one.
Now, in 1971, you retired.
Yes.
From the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
But you are a professor emeritus here at this university.
Yes, sir.
What have you done in the last 13 years to some of your activities? And now we've talked about, the exhibit preparation.
Yes.
What else have you done?
Then I have been treasurer of the Penn Chemists Fund, and I am still treasurer. We use the funds that we collect from that fund to buy books in the chemistry library. So that's a drawn-out affair where money comes in, $10, $20, $100, various amounts, and then that goes to the chemistry. But we keep that in a separate fund because we have felt that when we started the idea that if we put it in the chemistry library fund in chemistry, they would also deduct a certain amount of money for purchase of books. So we keep that fund, and when they buy books, they bill us. And so that's what it's still going. We have about $8,000 or $9,000 now.
Wow.
And we don't spend it all at once. And that is also used to subsidize the Penn Chemist leaflet with the biographies, little short biographies, and some historical items that I put in and things of that sort.
And see, you write frequently in the Penn Chemist.
Yes, little abstracts, things of that sort. And then a number of other things if I'm called upon to get something for the Catalyst, Philadelphia section, or it varies. So there's a, yes. I don't do as much in that anymore as I used to. And I was the custodian of all of their things that had to do with the section. Are you
the historian?
I was the historian. I still am, but we haven't done anything new recently. Probably they will do something again because it runs into a lot of money when you once revise it and do things of that sort. And then I got word from Stenerson and from Stack and was to New York and had special commendation for work there of the ACS, and attended some of those special meetings in New York.
You're still very active in the Moravian Church?
Yes, in the Moravian Church. I'm not as active anymore as I used to be. I did a lot of on committees, boards of the church at large, and now I don't do as much anymore, because once you get to be above a certain age, they want other people.
Were you ever involved in some sort of work with the synods and Moravian College? I was wondering if you...
Yes, I was a trustee of the Moravian College and of Linden Hall, and I went to Winston-Salem representing the northern province of our church, and things of that sort that have...
So you kept very active in the church throughout your entire career, I guess.
That's right.
And so you also have this interesting hobby we've talked about.
Yes, I have hobbies. Of course, music is one of them. But my chief hobby is making beeswax candles in old molds. Pure beeswax. I take the beeswax, get it from the beekeeper, and then process it, filter it, and then get the proper wicking and the old molds, and cast different kinds of candles.
How did this come about?
Well, this came about 50 years ago. We used to buy, the church in Emmaus used to buy candles from Arco, from Atlantic Refining, but these were the white ones, and we got them by the thousands, because at Christmas time, you know, we'd have many services, and give each person a beeswax candle. So Arco, Atlantic, went out of the business. They said, we're going to discontinue our business of candle making. So we had known about this, heard about it, and so one of the sacristans of our church was a pattern maker, and so we were a very closely knit group, and he then made a candle mold out of wood and tapered it just like a little candle, a Christmas type candle, and then we practiced. We bought beeswax and cast candles about every month. Just a few. And the first candles that we cast at too high a temperature. And then when they solidified, they cracked. They just tore apart. And we practiced a long time until we perfected that, and then he made more molds, and we could make 25, 50, 100, and then we also had the tinsmith make some candle molds with the tapered candles. So that's the way we made the candles, and it's still being done that way, but a younger person is doing it now. And so we made the candles that way. And then I bought a number of old candle molds. You know, the old candles molds were large candles, like you have a tapered candle mold for 12 or 14 inches tall. And so we bought some old candle molds, and then we cast. The most difficult part was not the beeswax, but the most difficult part was to buy the wicking. I couldn't get, with some companies, I couldn't get the proper wicking. They wouldn't sell me wicking. because they would think that I wanted to make candles to oppose them. And I had a dickens of a time. I got some candle wicking from a company in Ohio. I went to some candle companies in Philadelphia, tried to get some wicking. From some I did get them, others I did not. And so that's the way I got into the candle making business. And it was a lot of fun, and we had to leave them solidify. Usually overnight, we left them overnight. Had to be real cool. Otherwise, if you try to take them out of the candle mold, you have to be careful. You'll stretch the wax, and soon you'll break them or tear them apart.
Now, you have a family as well.
Yes.
When were you married to? Your wife's name is?
In 29.
Oh, so she was, while you were still a graduate student, you were married.
Yes.
And your wife's name is?
Dorcas.
Dorcas, and she is also from Emmaus.
Yes. Both of us lived in a small town of about 3,000 population at that time. Now it's about 15,000.
And what did she have a profession before she became?
Yes, she taught school. She went to the same normal school, but was a year later in attending than I was, and we got to know each other, and so we married then in 29, and. And she came down here, and we have been here ever since.
And you have one son?
One son, yes.
What is his name?
Harry.
Harry, yes. And Harry is a... Harry went to the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes. Oh, yes, he has his bachelor's and his master's and his doctorate in education from here. My wife has her master's from Penn. And she got her bachelor's here also. So we have been loyal Pennsylvanians.
I guess a question to sum our interview up, or a question to close our interview.
Yeah.
If someone asked you the question, what is the value of the history of chemistry, what would you say? Why study the history of chemistry?
Yeah. I must say that Dr. Smith said, told me before he passed away, that whenever you look in any book, a book in the history of chemistry or a book in chemistry or any other book, be sure you read between the lines. That's on the motto out here. He said, you will find that there are so many details to make up an education that it's unbelievable what will help you. It's not just one or two or three things. It's a composite of education. So I think that reading, even for the sake of just reading it, even though you are not a scientist, just for the sake of reading some parts of the history of science, lets you learn or will bring to your attention things that you don't think of normally in food, medicines, everything of that sort, and that I think it just broadens your horizon all the way around. And I have always felt that ever since Dr. Smith mentioned it to me. So that's what I do.
Well, thank you very much, Claude. I very much appreciate your time and your cooperation, and like I said, I'm very grateful to you for your coming by today and giving us this interview.
Thank you very, very much.